It's Monday. I'm Gab. He's Jules. It's the Gab and Jules Show. What a weekend, a packed weekend heading into an international break,
again,
Jules.
Every week we set up.
Look, we had Dortmund against Bayern. Well, Olga Fjordstrom will be with us very soon. We had Real Madrid chaos and losing. We got COVID all over the place. We have Leicester top of the table in the Premier League.
Indeed.
But let's start with the two teams that have defined the Premier League over the last couple of years, Manchester City and Liverpool. Now, it ends in a draw, and we all got the impression towards the end that the draw kind of suited everybody. But I don't want to forget the beginning, because I thought those first 45 minutes, especially the first half hour, were just exceptional.
It was really high level. I was lucky to be there. It was really fantastic. The way both teams set up, it's very much a 4-2-4 against a 4-2-4. De Bruyne played so high on the same line as Gabriel Jesus. You had, for the second time in the Premier League, but very much the first time like this, the front four of Liverpool with Diogo Jota and the other three. And literally, basically just Wijnaldum and Henderson on one side and Gundogan on Rodri the other side to defend in midfield. That was it. And it was end-to-end stuff.
I'm curious about that, because you had a chance to speak to Andy Robertson about that afterwards. And this was something deliberate that Klopp put together. He was trying to catch Pep Guardiola out?
Yeah, exactly. Robertson said we really wanted to create a surprise effect, that they didn't know what to do. We worked on that 4-2-4 for the last 2 days of training. And he felt that it worked for the first 20 minutes. He said it's a shame we didn't score a second goal to really capitalize on it, because he said for the first 20 minutes, it really looked like they didn't really know what to do, how to move, how to counter Jota, how to counter Firmino and Salah being together up front. They were dropping into spaces. He said we find gaps. There was good movement. He said, it changed a bit the way he plays, because he could not bomb forward as much as he usually does. And same, I guess, for Alexander-Arnold, although he plays in a different way. But he said, certainly for the first 20 minutes, it worked. And then, like Pep said as well after the game, I think City adjusted to it. And they tweak a few things there and there. And I think then City got the upper hand, obviously missed the penalty with De Bruyne.
Like, I might be in the minority here. I thought City, in the end, in terms of chances created, when you look at the whole 90 minutes, obviously they missed the penalty as well, which we'll get to. I thought City probably did more to win. I was a bit curious, though, if you go 4-2-4, if the opposition was 4-2-4, I was curious that the reaction was to push De Bruyne up, almost to mirror them, rather than saying, all right, you want to go 4-2-4, fine. I'm going to keep De Bruyne in his usual position, and I'm going to pass through your press. I'm going to force you to foul us. I have enough confidence in my build-up at the back that I can go and do that, especially because I have Cancelo, who can obviously play as well. Pep didn't do that. I wonder if it's because maybe the level of confidence isn't quite there right now with City. He doesn't feel that City are where they should be.
Or if you push De Bruyne up like he did, then he can find spaces between Wijnaldum and Henderson and the Liverpool back four, which is exactly what he did on the goal. On the goal, he's got too much space and too much time to find Gabriel Jesus. Okay, Gabriel Jesus, first touch. He's lucky, right? On the goal?
We had this whole debate. Listen.
He's looking for the ball. He touches it. And I love Gabriel Jesus.
I refuse. I think it's a little bit like, I don't know if you still believe in Father Christmas.
I do.
Or Santa Claus. Okay. Well, I'm a bit like that. I want to believe that Gabriel Jesus was channeling his inner Romario. No, because you know what? If Romario had done
The toe poke for Romario.
We've seen him do that. That's what he was doing. So please don't tell me that it was accidental. Okay. Ali Moreno also said that it was accidental and it was lucky. But I don't want to get
that. But at least De Bruyne found that pocket of space in between the lines.
No, but you can find that pocket of space starting from deeper as well.
Because deeper you will have Wijnaldum and Henderson in front of you.
Yeah, but you will also have three guys, because you'll have Rodri and Gundogan with you. You can pass around them.
True.
That was the one thing. I think fatigue definitely played a part in this. Actually, before we get to fatigue, let's sort this out. Do we need to have a debate over Joe Gomez's penalty?
I don't have any at all.
I agree with you.
It's even Sadio Mane.
He's not running. He's slowing down. Boom. Done. Those are the rules now. Deal with it. Move on. What I did find curious from Klopp, though, was Wijnaldum and Henderson seem to be playing continuously. Their legs are going to fall off. I know he went with a four for a reason. I would have expected Jones in this. We saw Jones later in the game.
Yeah.
But while we're on the subject of fatigue, they both talked about the five substitutes and how in England it's three. I think this is a theme that's going to come back.
Mm.
But you did some investigative journalism on Manchester City, and Pep substitutions.
Yeah, man, I understand the five-player debate. You and I had it. I'm more against it than not. You're more in favour of it. How many subs did Pep Guardiola make against Liverpool on Sunday?
I believe he made one.
Just one. Bernardo Silva came on for Ferran Torres. So I'm happy with all the debate. You know, we need five subs. But even when you have three and you make just one in a game like this, and after that you come and whinge a little bit about the rule, I'm like, come on, dude.
Yeah, you know. I'm with Pep on the rule, but you're right. Maybe it wasn't the day for that.
Yeah.
Podcast listeners, you're still with us. Those vapid television folks are gone.
Gone.
We touched upon Gomez earlier. We're in complete agreement. Like I'm just going to go out and say this. I'm sorry for those of you out there who don't seem to understand that this is the law. It's the law for a reason.
Yep.
You can make adjustments. Yes, if you're running at a full sprint, if you're being Usain Bolt, then in the dynamic of the way you run, you might hit the ball, or the ball might hit your arm, and it should not be judged a handball. Referees have the power to make that decision.
Yeah.
If, on the other hand, you are, as he's doing, is he's slowing down because he knows that he's going to deliver the cross,
yeah.
I don't think it's unconscionable to expect the player to go and not have his arm outside his body. And the fact that he didn't mean to do it, which you repeated
doesn't
over
change.
And over again.
Yeah, it doesn't change matter. Anything.
I mean, we're in agreement on that. One thing which I think also, I want to make clear, there's some confusion about this in the media here, what the directives are about how you should use VAR in those situations. People, and this applies to all fouls, right? People say, oh, but it looks worse in slow motion. Maybe it looks worse and it looks better in slow motion. But the general directive to referees from FIFA and also from UEFA is you use slow motion to determine if there was contact.
Yeah.
This is the only thing that you use it for.
Not to judge the action in itself.
Not to judge the action, to judge the dynamic of the action, yeah. to judge the intensity of a tackle or a foul or a push. You watch it in regular time. It's simple common sense. Now, if referees don't do that here in England because PGMOL likes to apply their own version of exceptionalism, like they sometimes do, not much you can do about that.
The Sadio Mane penalty?
It's 100% penalty.
I mean, Walker, every time, every single time, he gets scored the same way. And I know Roy Keane was quite tough on him after the game.
We don't need to talk about that.
We don't need to talk about it. But it's true that every time it's the same foul. And even if there's not much contact, Rodri said after the game, oh, you know, you need more of a foul to give a penalty. I mean, come on.
You got to take the good with the bad, I think, with Kyle Walker. I think it's as simple as that. But from one right back to another, Trent Alexander-Arnold, though we don't know the extent of his injury. I don't think he was having the greatest season. He was having a bit up and down.
Yeah, definitely.
The guy's still really, really young. What is he, 21 now?
Yeah.
Obviously, that's a blow. I'm assuming you either play Milner there or Nico Williams. In the 4-2-4, if that is the way they're going to go, which I'm not sure about.
Me neither.
Obviously, the fullback's attacking role is diminished. I think it would have been more of a blow last year when they really needed Trent's creativity. But clearly a blow there. Just to wrap this, where does it leave City? Because I thought things were going to improve with a fit Gabriel Jesus, a real center forward up there. I think they did improve. And look, this is his first start. His first start is against Liverpool, okay?
And he scores.
And he scores. Give him, although you just said he was lucky. But,
no.
But do they look like champions here? Like potential champions? Because there is ground to be made up.
Yeah, I thought they looked better. I was there for the Leicester game as well.
The center backs looked good.
Yeah, Ruben Dias and Laporte looked strong, looked good. I mean, even if you're Pep Guardiola as a manager, there's nothing you can do about Kyle Walker apart from dropping him and put someone else, but that's not going to happen. Him still making those silly mistakes now and again. So, but I thought in terms of balance of the team, they get it right. Rodri was saying, you know, when we've got everybody coming back from injuries, it's easier. Of course it is. So I think they're looking good, better. They will get stronger and stronger, I think, the more fitter they are. Like De Bruyne, you could still see that he's not completely fully fit. Gabriel Jesus, of course. And then he would have so many options. So I still think the 5 points behind Liverpool with just one game in hand, it would be really tight, as we've been saying since the beginning of the season. But I still expect them to be right up there until the end.
I'll leave you with this thought. I think they have two exceptional players and another who could be exceptional one day. And I'm talking about Bernardo Silva, Raheem Sterling, and Phil Foden. I don't think any of those three have been anywhere near the level that they've been at in previous years. If just one or two of them reaches that level again, then all of a sudden City make a big leap forward. And that's before we get into Aguero returning. Yeah, Aguero, who, by the way, enters, you know, in what, less than 2 months. He's in the last 6 months of his contract. Yeah. So big question there. But yeah, I don't think this is the end of City by any stretch. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Right, enough Premier League. Let's go over to the Bundesliga. Some people call it Der Klassiker, but that's kind of a made-up thing, copying
it's
a classic.
Cool. It's still cool.
Borussia Dortmund haven't been that good for most of their history, but they're pretty darn good now. They have a lot of talent. They played Bayern. Welcome into Jan Åge Fjørtoft. Jan, this was billed as the clash of the center forwards, the present Robert Lewandowski against the future, and a little bit present too, in Erling Haaland. Lewandowski won. Did he get the better of it? Also because he has a better, more organized, more resilient supporting cast than Haaland does?
Well, being a Norwegian, I will never be taken as a guy that could speak about fellow Norwegians, but I would say that just to compare a 20-year-old Erling Haaland with maybe, and I say maybe, the best number nine that the world have seen since Marco van Basten, this is my opinion, is a fantastic number nine. His game is unbelievable. But I think that it's fair to say that Erling at the moment is one of the best strikers in the world. And even in this game, maybe not having the same cast, but still having players around him that can put him in good positions. They've done that time and time again. And you see his stats at Dortmund, they are excellent. Even in this game, he could have got 3, 4, 5 goals through his chances. I think that he was a bit self-critical after the game when he said that it was my fault. If I scored my 5 goals, we would probably have won the game. I just, that tells a lot about the character. But I think that we should be quite calm when we start comparing him with Lewandowski. Lewandowski is over the years and he's playing for the best club. He can go deep. He can keep he's a great, great header of the ball. He can score with both feet. Erling can get there. Erling got other strengths. Erling is maybe a better counter striker because he's quicker. He is maybe stronger in his runs. Very good as well to create space. But Lewandowski, when you play for Bayern Munich, you end up being at front anyway. And I think there was some great, great screen after the game when Erling Haaland went over to Lewandowski and kind of hugged him. And that was a 20-year-old seeing a player that I'm 100% inspire him to develop and be better in the future.
Can we be demanding of Erling Haaland? Because I watched the game and I was disappointed he didn't score more than one goal, Jan. And he's only 20, and as you said, I guess it's always good that you create the chances and you've got them, even if you're not clinical, to take them all. And you said Erling was himself a bit disappointed. Are we right, or should we say, okay, he's still quite young, even in his career, that games like this will happen, he will learn, and then the next time maybe he will score 2, and maybe the next time he will score 3? Or do you think we are right to be a bit disappointed that he only scored 1 because he had a few chances? He had that cross as well that he messed up completely from the right-hand side, if you remember. Are we right to be a bit demanding?
No, I think that deservedly he's up there among the best at the moment. I mean, look at his stats, and I said that not only by Dortmund, but by the records he's breaking in the Champions League. But yeah, everybody can do whatever they want. But I think that when you see a 20-year-old, I think you have to see how they develop. And I know there is no one more self-critical than Erling Haaland himself. And I think that it's unbelievable that he... I think what you've seen now this season is taking another step. I think he is better in his build-up play. I think that he contribute more there for Dortmund as he did. But yeah, we can all we have the right of freedom, speech, thoughts, and everything. So we can, but we shouldn't be disappointed that he only scored one goal against the best team in the world. He created chances, and you're right what you're saying. Sometimes you expect him to do better because we've seen that all the time. But I think when we compare Erling Haaland, he is on a stage, like you said, we are comparing him with himself. So when he gets those chances, we are so used to him taking them. And in this game, he didn't, but he was very involved in the game. He was the danger guy for them. And again, compare it with Lewandowski. Well, right. It's a tough one when you're talking about the best number nine in the world.
In fact, Haaland's contribution was so big that your buddy Bounassar, who did not have a good game.
Oh, my God. Placed... I swear, they didn't want to pass him the ball. I was watching the game, and he was open many times. And they were... Oh, yeah, let's go that way. Let's go left.
I don't want to blame Bounassar for everything, but one of the things that happened was Bounassar passes a bad ball to Joshua Kimmich,
course.
Who miscontrols it.
Yep.
Erling Haaland, the immense Erling Haaland, latches onto the ball, scares the bejesus out of Joshua Kimmich, who goes and fouls him and injures himself in the process. Now, joking aside, obviously we feel bad for Joshua Kimmich.
Yeah.
Jan, for me, Kimmich is probably the second most important player on Bayern after Lewandowski. And part of that is there is no natural replacement for him. I know Tolisso came on, and again, some teams, Tolisso, Goretzka, you get away with that and that'll work fine. Against other teams, you're going to need somebody who can pass the ball. Now, I need you to discuss the different options you have. You can play Javi Martinez, who is about as mobile as a Statue of Liberty, but he can certainly pass a little bit.
And he can sit.
You can play Marc Roca, who I think has played 1 minute of Bundesliga action until this point, but he was a starter for two seasons at Espanyol.
And he can pass.
And he can pass a little bit for a relegated team. You can play David Alaba there, which I think is where David Alaba wants to play. It's where he's played for Austria. Although this is a guy with an expiring contract. And also, if you play Alaba there, you can only do that once your defenders come back, right? Because, you know, they've got Süle out, they've got Davies out.
Pavard.
They've got Pavard out. You know, Alaba is very good, but he can't play center back and central midfield at the same time. And also, we saw Boateng going off too in that game. So, how serious a problem is this, and which of the three solutions do you like best?
Well, I want to add to the two most. I think you would add Manuel Neuer as well into there, because Neuer, Kimmich, Lewandowski, that core line of Bayern Munich is unreplaceable. Does that mean that they will? They won't win a lot of games. Of course, Bayern will always win games. But I think what you got in Kimmich and the replacements that you kind of describe is that you have this one, he can do this, he can do that, the other one can do that. But the thing is, with Kimmich, he can do everything. He can play as a number six and still act like a number eight. Sometimes he can act like a tenner. Just with his pure will, he will score goals. A fantastic player. And what I will say now is also that, and I say this in a positive way, he's also got that dirtiness of him, what I like with players. He always got that. Just see when players are lying down for injury. Kimmich he's close. He's around there. That is allowed. That is a brilliant player to have in there. I think that in some games, you can even play with one number six. You can just have, which they've tried as well, you can have only Goretzka there. But my preferred thing would be to put someone else at the center half position and put Alaba in there. Alaba has shown that he's helped me with the word versatility, whatever the English word, that he can
versatility.
Play versatility. Okay, I was close. But he can play in different positions and he can go in there. So I'm not worried about that in the daily life in the Bundesliga. If they have to have Kimmich out against the best team, that will take a lot strength of Bayern Munich. Also, he has developed into a leader. I didn't see that happening because he was a bit overestimated at the beginning because everybody wanted him to be Philipp Lahm because he could play right back, he could play number six, he could play everywhere.
But he played center back too under Carlo.
Yeah, but I was wrong. This is a fantastic player, and he will dominate German football and international football for years to come. A fantastic player, and we wish him all the best. Hopefully, 2-3 months should be enough, and then he'll be back in the Rückrunde.
The good thing is they're already through in the Champions League, right? Pretty much. Yeah. There's no one.
If you have to lose Kimmich for 3 months, this is a good time to do it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then you get him back for the very important part of the season.
Now, is there a case to be made when you look at, obviously VAR played a big role in this game in disallowing Lewandowski's goal, I think the decisions were correct. Jan, this is the thing that strikes me, and I don't like talking about metaphysical things like culture and mentality because these are things I can't measure and I don't fully understand. However, you look at that moment when Dortmund take the lead, when Kimmich gets himself injured, and you think, yes, here is the game. This is where we consolidate. Lucien Favre was probably thinking what he was going to say at halftime. And then Delaney gives up the free kick. Our friend Thomas Delaney, we like him a lot.
We love him.
But you know, I think a bit unlucky in the way he certainly didn't mean to foul him, right?
Definitely.
The three of them stand over the ball like it's the freaking Yalta conference and it's Stalin, Roosevelt, and Churchill.
Yeah.
And then it's the free kick and it gets deflected.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, it's 1-1, and it's a kick in the family jewels, Jan. And then I don't know what Favre said at halftime. Whatever he tells them, they go out, and after 3 minutes, Mats Hummels, who is a veteran player, who's super experienced, Lewandowski somehow gets in front of him, scores the glancing header, and all of a sudden the game is completely overturned. Is there something to that? Is there something to this mentality, to this charisma, to this stardust, to this personality that Bayern have and Dortmund do not?
Yeah, good question. Because if you see that game, after the first half, I would say the headline of the game was typical. It was a typical Marco Reus goal. We haven't seen that for some years. That was a fantastic goal. And it was so typical that Bayern then score even before halftime, 45 plus 3, a deflection on Meunier. That was so
had
typical,
to be Meunier. Had to be Thomas Meunier.
I know.
Yeah, Meunier. We can talk about him later. I can talk about him for a long time.
Man.
But that was typical. But I think that I remember some years ago I was discussing with some guys about Arsenal when Arsenal started losing their best players. And I remember a friend of mine who played at Arsenal that long, long time ago, Viv Anderson, if you remember him. Viv Anderson, he said to me, but Jan, listen, it's quite easy, but when young kids, they want to win trophies. That's why they're in the game. So one day, they will kind of go away. They meet each other now at the international break, and they will start, yeah, you're a good team. You have good talents. How many trophies have you got? And I think that is the danger with Dortmund, with now having the best Norwegian, the best American, the two best English, although Sancho is not at the moment, unfortunately. But that is the main challenge for Dortmund. How long can they keep these young kids without winning trophies? And the culture needs to be built up. I mean, it's also typical that Bayern got that culture at the moment because they have that winning mentality in there. It's also typical that Hummels, who has a fantastic foot, he's winning every header, his positioning is great, but the way he was running back, I mean, I could have run next to him. Lewandowski is in front of you. You start pointing to anybody else, please mark him. And then that can't happen. And I think that is, and the weakest link in that is Favre, of course. Favre is, he loves his football. He loves his analysis, and he's a great coach. But at the end of the day, will you take the next step? Are Dortmund closer to Bayern now than they were last year? I doubt it.
Yeah. For me, they lose this game psychologically every single time. Before the game, you know they've lost it already. I just don't think they can compete psychologically with Bayern. Bayern go into that game thinking, we're going to win. We know we're going to win. Whatever happens, regardless of how well we play or how well they play, how many chances they create, we're going to win. Right. And I think Dortmund go into this game thinking like, it's going to be so hard. You know, we even when we play well, we don't beat them. When we don't play well, we don't beat them. Kimmich comes out and scores an amazing goal 1 year. Then, you know, we've got this. Then we've got that. And I think psychologically, it's just, and unless they do that, unless they beat Bayern, they would never be able to win this.
But it has to be said, I think, it has to be said that every team in the world do that. Dortmund's just unlucky that they are staying in the same league as this team. Because ask Barcelona what they think about Bayern Munich, ask PSG, ask the English team. At the moment, Bayern is so much ahead. Of course, they've been this for years. And back to the Klopp days when they started beating them. The only thing that can beat Bayern is that they appoint the wrong coach, that they keep their older players too long. And at the moment, they don't do anything. Even the young kids they're developing in Bayern now can equal with the Dortmund guys.
All right. Right now, I hate myself and I hate you guys because you've brought me over to the side of believing that the psychology, personality, all this nonsense might be real. Jan, thanks so much.
Thanks, Jan.
You're welcome. Always a pleasure, boys.
Vielen Dank, mein Freund. Stay safe.
Auf Wiedersehen. Auf Wiedersehen.
Right, enough German stuff. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Real Madrid lose at Mestalla to Valencia, who snap a string of 3 straight defeats. It's the first time ever that Real Madrid have 3 penalties given against them in a single game. Casemiro and Hazard, unavailable. Fine. But Kroos and Mandy were rested. Jules, is it time for us to have a little chat about Zizou?
So you can look at it, and it's a freak game. And it is, because 3 penalties never happened in 91 years of La Liga history to Real Madrid, right?
You give the penalties because somebody's doing something they shouldn't be doing.
I know. Where I think we start looking at it, and it's not the first time that back four is all over the place. I mean, Varane, what's going on? Is this his twin playing or something? Lucas Vazquez is not right back, as we've been saying. He conceded 1 penalty, he gives away 1 penalty. He's not very comfortable in that position. Sergio Ramos, I'm sorry, I know he scored 100 goals, but defensively, he's not the Sergio Ramos that he used to be. And then you've got Marcelo at left back. Listen, Zinedine Zidane, since he came back in March 2019, has lost 9 Liga games. In all those 9 Liga games, Marcelo started. And I'm not saying, I don't want to pick on him.
And he's undefeated when Marcelo doesn't start.
I just don't
give the corollary to that.
Marcelo is not good enough anymore.
Yeah.
Even for a game like Valencia, who were like, are not very good.
What about the one Ramos gave away? Did he really think he's going to get away with that?
And then he's just like, no, I didn't do anything. Oh, come on. Lionel Messi starts the first half on the bench for Barcelona and comes on at halftime when it's 1-1 and they destroy Betis 5-2. Is it that simple, Gab?
Is it simple? You mean that they're a better team with Lionel Messi? Yes, they are.
And then he sorts it all out.
Look, Betis are a bad side. I think they match up well with Barcelona. Yeah. They finished 1-1. But Barcelona weren't playing badly. Griezmann had the stage, and then he goes and he ruins it all by missing the penalty. Messi comes on. One of the first things he does, he doesn't even touch the ball. It's the dummy assist.
Amazing.
How sweet was that?
Amazing.
No, a bit special. And look, I think we'll see more of Messi now because obviously Ansu Fati injured. We wish him well.
News, yeah.
That is a big, big loss. Barcelona are what they are right now. They're one team with Messi. They're another team without Messi. Koeman's trying to manage his transition. Who knows? But it's big. Messi's first goal in open play in La Liga.
Yeah, yeah.
The Vultures were circling around Ole Gunnar Solskjaer after the midweek defeat to Başakşehir. Jules, and he comes back with a convincing win over formerly top of the table Everton. All is well now, right?
Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has more lives than a cat. This is it. I mean, every time you think he's going to get the sack, this is over, this is finished, come on now. Let's be serious. He comes out with a strong performance collectively, because that was good collectively. Everton were disappointing, and without Richarlison, it's not the same team at all in terms of energy and what they get going forward and things like this. But it's just, I think it's amazing. I think it's fascinating how, when you've got your back to the wall, United and Solskjaer just come back out.
Look, when you have better players, more highly paid players than most of your opposition, you will win most of your game. Your job as a manager is to guarantee the consistency that happens most weeks. They're up and down,
I think in part because he's not the greatest. He's not the second coming.
Consistency comes from there. You know, big players do big things in certain games and win it for you. Sticking with Solskjaer, he complained post-game about having to play a lunchtime kickoff after having played in the Champions League in midweek. Klopp made the same point as well. Do they have a point? Something tells me that you don't agree.
They definitely have a point. But you know what? The people you should be making the point to isn't to the media. You should go upstairs. You should go talk to Ed Woodward. Better yet, get one of the Glazers. I recommend Joel on the phone and say, hey, the next time we negotiate the TV deal, how about we don't be so greedy? Because the broadcasters rightly are going to say, hey, I want to put United in this kickoff slot. I don't want Sheffield United there. No disrespect. I want the other United, the one people tune in to watch. So if you're willing to give up a little bit less money to have these safeguards in place, fine. Otherwise, shut up. Yeah. Because you know what? The reason you make so much money is because United make so much money, and the reason United make so much money is in part because they set it up this way. Yeah. Felipe Caicedo scores a dramatic injury time equalizer. It's his fifth injury time goal in the last 15 months as Lazio draw with Juve, and Ronaldo substituted after scoring and hitting the post. More headaches for Andrea Pirlo?
It's just another more points dropped. I just didn't think they were good. I mean, I like the goal because it comes from Cuadrado, and we said all the time since the beginning of the season, the fullbacks have to give more. They have to give more to Morata. They have to give more to Cristiano. That happened, and then you concede again. You know, and I think in the end, I'm just left again. Oh, this was not very good.
Not good from Paulo Dybala either.
Not good from Dybala. You take Cristiano off, and Caicedo is the guy, he's the hero, right? He scores late against Torino to win. Yeah. He scores late against Zenit to draw. He scores late against Juve to draw. Isn't it? Wow, incredible. Yeah, we touched upon it on Thursday, but staying with Lazio, they could be in serious trouble over the way they've handled their COVID-19 test and all of that.
Yeah, there's now, there's law enforcement.
Lied, right?
It's not so clear to say that they lied. It's just that, their players test positive for the UEFA tests, and they go and they send them to the lab that they chose, which is an accredited lab, but which is a couple hundred miles away, and then they test negative, and then they go back to UEFA, and then they test positive again. Something's clearly right here.
Yeah, it's strange.
There's going to be a full investigation. Like, there has to be one lab, one set of standards. Not one lab, you have multiple labs, but one set of standards, one process for everybody, and have a level playing field. I hope nothing creepy or untoward rises up out of this, because Lazio fans deserve better. Real Sociedad beat Granada 2-0 to stay top of La Liga, but Jules, it helps when your opponents are down to just 7 first-team players.
It's an incredible story,
COVID
really. COVID again, Granada had a player testing positive who was in contact with the rest of the team when they went to play in the Europa League in midweek. So they asked the Spanish Federation, listen, you know, we need to self-isolate some of the players. We will only have 7. Can we postpone the game? They said no. They asked a second time. They said no. They asked a third time. They said no.
To be fair, we weren't just being mean. They said no, you need some documentation, blah, blah, blah.
Common sense sometimes. They're not lying, you know, or anything like that. They go, and to be fair, they did quite well, considering they only had 7 players from their first team available and the rest were kids. But
I think Real Sociedad didn't want to run up the score.
Yeah, probably. Gab, don't want to talk too much about COVID, but we have to. Why are Roma, Lazio and Fiorentina not releasing the international players for this international break?
It's the protocols. Callejon tested positive for Fiorentina, Dzeko testing positive for Roma. And so the entire team has to self-isolate. And so that means that all their internationals, not the ones who tested positive, can't travel.
Yeah.
Now, these are decisions made by local health authorities. Obvious question, though, is local health authorities treat things differently in different parts of Italy. Similar rules, by the way, in Germany as well. And so that's why Inter's internationals are going away, and Roma's are not.
It's crazy.
It is crazy, but it's the crazy world we live in. Just as crazy as Denmark, where, as you know, they're calling all the mink. Now it looks as if there's a big issue with Danish players. If they go and play for their country, will they have to self-isolate for 2 weeks upon their return? Because there seem to be no sporting exemptions. We're navigating by sight here. Yeah. That's the best you can do. Mm. Enough COVID, though. Let's talk Arsenal. Much love to Aston Villa, who beat them 3-0. Could have been more. Yep. Mikel Arteta said it was one of Arsenal's worst performances since he's been in charge. And guess what? He says, it's all on him. It's my fault. That's what Mikel says. Is he right? Is it all his fault?
He's right in the sense that he picked the wrong team. We told him after the United win, we said, you can't always play Partey and Elneny. Some games it won't work because you need more creativity. You need better passer of the ball.
Oh, really? But what about all those people who told us that Partey was the second coming of David Silva?
Well, he had an off day. He came off at halftime as well. I don't know if it was for injury or just how bad he was in that first half. It was just a bad one for Arsenal. Well done to Villa, though. Grealish was...
Well done, Dean
Smith. I don't know what Grealish was still doing at that club. No offence, but he's far too good for Aston Villa, I think. Let's celebrate Leicester, though, as well. We're talking about teams from that area. No Soyuncu, no Castagne, no Ndidi, no Ricardo Pereira, of course. And the top of the Premier League after they win 1-0 against Wolves.
Yeah, a bit more controversy in this game. But look, it's a tremendous achievement from Brendan Rodgers. I think a lot of people who mocked him in the past. And look, I'm just wanting to be clear. The reason people didn't like Brendan Rodgers in the past was his behavior. It was his non-footballing behavior, the way he came across. Football-wise,
nice.
The guy has a football brain.
Amazing.
And what he's doing is remarkable.
And Wesley Fofana, I know you're from Marseille, but I love you so much. You're so good.
Jules, they're not stopping my boy Moise Kean. There's no stopping him at all, is there? Who needs Mbappe and Neymar when you got Moise?
Exactly. 5-7 now for him. He was fantastic again against Rennes on Saturday night. Well done to him. He's integrated so well. He's just fantastic. All about Ibra in Milan. They come back from 2 goals down against Hellas Verona. He misses a penalty but gets the equaliser in the 93rd minute. Gab, they're 2 points clear at the top, but it feels like 2 points drop, right? It's a shame.
Well, Verona really good, obviously, good. As you recall, they held Juve to a draw as well. But it does feel like 2 points dropped, some mistakes in there. Ibra missing the penalty. The goalkeeper trolled him before. He says, hey, didn't you miss the last two?
Yeah.
It's three in a row now that the great man has missed. But tough one, but they're still top. 2 points clear. Nobody thought they would be in this position at this stage.
No, not at all.
A late winner from Harry Kane. I think, was it 150th goal in his
career? Yes, it was indeed.
Career sent Spurs past West Brom. Jules, Mourinho is second in the table. Who's laughing now?
Who's laughing now? Not me. And they were even top at some point for like 10 or 20 minutes or something. Pragmatism. Yeah. We said it already at the end of last season after restart. He made that team far more pragmatic. Even when they don't play well, They find a way. His substitution, I thought, were quite inspired.
That's brilliant. Awesome, bringing in Carlos Vinicius, suddenly having like bit more oomph up front.
Yeah, it's a no-brainer. I don't think there's anything genius about that. But still, to do it and the way it worked, they were helped a lot by the West Brom goalkeeper, who made a mess, obviously, of that Harry Kane header.
He made a bunch of very good saves before that.
And so did Lloris. I think this is a game that they could have dropped points and drew, for example, which might not have been seen as a bad result.
West Brom had a number of guys out.
Yeah,
including Mateus Pereira.
Yeah, indeed. And Branislav Ivanovic. So, really good win. Listen, since the United win, Old Trafford, they haven't always played great, Spurs, but they just found a way of winning it. It's good. It's good for them. Really good for them. Frank Lampard says it's Chelsea's best performance of the season. They beat Sheffield United 4-1. As Hakim Ziyech steals the show again. Gab, could they be better without Pulisic and Havertz, who were both missing for that game?
I think they're a better team without them. I think
more balanced, you mean?
A more balanced unit, a more rational team. And I'm not having to go at Havertz or Pulisic for that matter. But I think there's a difference when you're Ziyech, when you've been around the block. He's not old, but he's got a lot of European experience. Yeah. He's more of a leader, more of a vocal leader. He's got a lot of quality. And he can play that position, starting wide, coming inside, being aware of where his teammates are, in a way that perhaps Pulisic, with all the injuries and the stop starts that he's had, and the fact that he's simply younger, he's not there yet. And we always said he's got so many options, Frank Lampard, it's difficult to find the right things, but they're also a better team when they have Tammy Abraham at center forward. When you have a real center forward, not Timo Werner, because Timo Werner is going to do one thing over and over again because the guy is not, he's not that big striker. He's not going to tie people up. And Eser Havertz, he may be the most talented player on this Chelsea team, okay?
Yeah.
But he's a rough diamond.
Yeah.
You can't fit him in that easily, and that's why we've seen him move all around the pitch. So If the goal now is to go and win games, sure, go for it. Go with Kova and Conte in midfields. You got more of a solid base.
Yeah.
Mason Mount doesn't have to worry as much when he makes his forward runs. Ziyech reads the situations perfectly. When Ziyech comes inside, you've got Reece James who feels freer to come forward, which he might not do if Pulisic is out. You know, it's a lot of these things come together. This is more of a team. In the long term, obviously, you want Havertz and Pulisic to be part of it. But
you
right
think
now,
that is easier than to bring Pulisic in that team than it would be to bring Havertz back in that team, right?
I mean, it depends what kind of a run they go on. Obviously, Havertz is the future, right?
Yeah.
Given what they've invested in him and whatever. But if you're Lampard, I think it's a lot to say, like, let me take my time with Havertz. Obviously, now he's out because of the positive COVID test. But
he'll be back after the international break, so he'll have to find a way.
But if it takes him a little bit longer to play his way into the side, I think it's not a big deal. Mm. And also, like I said, I want to see, right now I would like to see Chelsea with a center forward, whether it's a real one, whether it's Abraham, whether it's Giroud in some games. I just think it's just a better setup given what they have around them. No Edin Dzeko, thanks to COVID. So Henrik Mkhitaryan grabs a hat trick as Roma win away to Genoa 3-1. Jules, I love Mkhitaryan.
We all do.
Could this
He's
be his
nice
comeback
guy.
Season?
I hope so. Genoa are not very good, right?
No,
let's start with that. So, but great on him. The energy is still very much there. Technically, he was always very good. I just think he needed a bit of love and a bit of confidence back. And maybe when he's the main guy, he likes that as well. Never really associated him with that kind of leadership.
Weird metaphysical channeling? Because obviously, look, except for that one season at Dortmund, Mkhitaryan's best seasons came in the Ukraine in Donetsk.
Yeah.
Paulo Fonseca, of course, is a former Shakhtar Donetsk manager. They went there at the same time, right? But is there something? Does he speak to him in Ukrainian, or that he can channel and get the best out of Mickey?
Showing like old DVDs of him at Shakhtar, like, look, this is what you were doing. Maybe. Let's hope he continues. That's the Inter and Atalanta battled to a 1-1 draw. Conte sees another lead slip away. What's the problem, Gab? How come this happens over and over again?
So Conte got kind of annoyed. You know, this year we talked about how Conte's been more zen, more performance and whatever. He got a little annoyed because somebody said, oh, you know, you didn't play with enough intensity. And it was actually Giancarlo Marocchi, the former Juventus midfielder, who I think might have overlapped with Conte at Juve. He said it in a two-way after the game. And Conte, you know, not smiling, said, yeah, I think you need to put that bottle of wine away, you know. And then later he said something for which the guys on the show slaughtered him. I give Conte a bit of benefit of the doubt. He says, look, as a manager, you can give people a lot of instructions on what to do on the pitch. You can coach them up. You can train them up. But you can't cover every eventuality. Yeah. So when something different happens on the pitch, when the opposition gives you a different look, you need players who can react and make decisions on their own. And, you know, I can only do so much there. And maybe that was part of it on the day. And I think part of the problem is, and this is something that other managers have raised as well, Conte is a guy who gives you a bazillion instructions, and he wants you to follow them all the time. When you do that, you create a climate where the players, they're less extemporaneous. So they're less free to go and react to situations to make their own decisions. They're not used to making decisions of that nature. So I think it was that, rather than Conte going and dumping everything on the players, as some people interpreted it. But yeah, it's 2 points dropped again. Hopefully, you know, Lukaku came back at the end. Hopefully he stays fit through the international break, comes back, and they get things going.
Big boost,
but they are creating chances.
Yeah,
they're just stuttering a bit defensively.
By the way, Mironchuk scored for Atalanta, and I saw you had that debate over Twitter in the weekend. Who are the best twins in football right now?
Right now, I would have to say it's the Mironchuk twins.
More than the Bender?
The Benders? Come on.
It depends what you like. If you like defending, and you know, Mironchuk's obviously...
I'm looking for a sponsor for this, all right? If some company wants to go and sponsor, we're going to have a competition. I'd have to decide how far back to go because I need to find the original set of Super Twins. I don't know if I can... I don't know if it's the Boers or the people before them. But whoever it is, we will name the trophy after them. Right now, it's provisionally called the De Boer Trophy until somebody comes up with better wins. It'll be like a belt that they can wear, and it gets passed on from set of twins to set of twins. There's no question the Benders had it.
There's not many contenders, though. You know that, right?
True, but there have been some in the past. There have been the Zanonis in Italy, yeah, the Filippinis in Italy. There's the Romeros in Paraguay, yeah, which I discovered via Twitter. I was unaware of them. So I think we can give the belt to the Miranchuks, Alexei and Antonin, for now.
Yeah.
Leipzig dispatched Freiburg 3-0. But Jules, can we show Angelino some love again? That was a magical free kick.
It was. I mean, there's nothing he cannot do. Remember that goal in the Champions League where he turns on his like first touch and score against Başakşehir, which was fantastic. I'm just like, is his talent wasted as a left wing back or left back, depending on how Leipzig plays? Do we want him to play a bit more
as a winger?
As a winger, or maybe even more central in midfield? I don't know, somewhere in midfield three, for example, on the left. I don't know. It's just, I find the way he's improved in the last 18 months has just been incredible, and I think Nagelsmann deserves some credit. He deserves as well, and Angelino himself, but Nagelsmann too.
Should he come back to City? Is he a better option at left back than City's options? Because the knock is, oh, but he doesn't
defend. We said the other day, didn't we?
I know, we said it. We're repeating ourselves.
Is it just a wing back or a left back? Can he play left back? Is he good enough defensively to play left back in a team like City?
Is Joao Cancelo good enough defensively to play left back in a team like City? Is Zinchenko? I mean, come on.
Exactly. I would have him. I would have him back. Atletico beat Cadiz 4-0. Gab, after 7 games, they have 17 goals in the league this year. Last season, after 7 games, they had 7 goals. Can we say once and for all that Cholismo is dead? Do you dare say
that? Okay. Now, first of all, Cholismo will live for eternity, okay? Because once it's been created, you can't put it back into the box.
You can't.
However, this is a more attacking version of Cholismo. As we said before, you invest a ton of money in Luis Suarez, not in terms of fee, obviously, but in terms of wages. And so you have Luis Suarez, and you say, well, how do I get the best out of him? I put players around him for him to play off of. And no more counterattack. And they just move their whole center of gravity further up the pitch. Yeah. It's a process that theoretically should have started last season. We saw glimpses of it last season, but then when things got tough, you'd always regress to go back.
And put Marcos Llorente up front.
Exactly. But now, I think they have. And Cadiz, by the way, 5 games undefeated. I think they were 5th or 6th in the table going into it. Beat Real Madrid, of course. So, you know, this was not a gimme by any stretch. Joao Felix is playing better. Marcos Llorente is playing better. Correa was good when he came on.
Changing your way of playing for Suarez has helped and benefited Joao Felix massively. He's maybe the one who's benefited the most of that team, because he plays higher up on the pitch. He doesn't need to drop deep, or he doesn't have to receive the ball on the halfway line. Now, he received the ball 20 yards from goal or 30 yards from goal, and then he's so good on the ball. It's incredible.
So far, Joao Felix is on his way to a breakout season again.
Definitely.
Fulham lose to West Ham 1-0. Jules, you're not going to mock Ademola Lookman for the way he took that injury time penalty, are you?
I don't want to mock you, Ademola. I love you very, very much. I think you're a very good little player.
Well, you're a little player. He used to look like a little boy, but now he's got the beard.
Yeah, so don't take a Panenka if you can't score it. This is the rule. The rule is only do a Panenka if you know you're going to score. You take a Panenka in the World Cup final because you're Zinedine Zidane and you know you're going to score it. You take one in big games to win La Liga because you're Sergio Ramos and you know you're going to score. I'm sorry, not in a game like this. In the last minute, when you play for Fulham and you can get a draw, which would be a really good point for you, don't do that, man. Don't
Ademola,
do that.
Pay no attention to him. It's not about the number of times you fall. It's about the number of times you get up.
Please. Borussia Mönchengladbach lose a wild one to Bayer Leverkusen 4-3, but Gab, Valentino Lazaro's goal will live forever in our memories, YouTube memories.
Yes,
anywhere.
He's going to wipe all memories of Olivier Giroud. It's Lazaro, risen from the dead, to score the most unbelievable scorpion kick. Oh, much, much love to the former Newcastle Inter guy. I think he might still be an Inter player, as far as I know.
I think so.
But yes, well done, Lazaro.
Wow, well done.
That brings us to an end. Thanks for living, Jules. Should we come back on Thursday? Do this all over again?
Come on.
Yeah. All right, Thursday it is. Till then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.